This is the Fun, Food and Fitness Podcast, where I have real conversations about how people navigate BS and establish a healthy relationship with food, exercise and their bodies. Okay, so welcome to the Fun Food and Fitness Podcast. My name is Emma, and today I'm really excited to be speaking with Rebecca Day, who's a friend of mine, who's also a vegan, also recently finished her PhD, and also a kind of recent runner. And yeah, I love her approach to running because I think it's like not about sort of numbers or being the best or anything like that. It's just about kind of having fun and progression, and yeah, I just love it. It's such a refreshing approach. So yeah, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, thanks. I'm excited.
Yeah, me too. So you're kind of really into running kind of now, but I know that like hasn't always been the case. So yeah, I was wondering if you back as far as you want in terms of your journey a bit with kind of fitness and, you know, and particularly with running.
Yeah, so this time 2 years ago, I suppose, I did no exercise at all, like not even a little bit of exercise. I didn't even try. I was one of those people that would be like, I'm allergic to exercise. I can't possibly like do anything with exercise. And it got to the point I was in the write-up year of my PhD. So I'd stopped working anywhere except from home. So I'd like quit any part-time jobs and things that I was doing to just focus on writing. So I was just working from home every day, all day, every day. And I was doing maybe 1,500 steps a day. And I was like, okay, this isn't sustainable. I used to always be relatively active. Like I would walk everywhere I went, I would get at least some steps in the day. So it was as soon as I started working from home that I started feeling really kind of groggy and just unmotivated to do anything else. So I thought, well, okay, I need to do something. I don't know what I'm going to do. But then I was talking to a friend and she suggested that we enter the ballot for the Berlin Marathon. And I was like, what? I don't think that's a good idea, but sure, why not? Let's enter the ballot. And then we thought, hang on, we're going to enter this ballot. So what can we do? Because you can't just turn up and run a marathon.
Yeah.
That's not a thing. So we downloaded Couch to 5K when basically on the same day that we entered the ballot. And then basically we just sort of the next day, we were like, right, we're going out and we're going to do week one, day one of Couch to 5K. And I remember it being the worst thing ever. It was horrible. I was out of breath. I could barely run for a minute without sort of feeling like everything was going to explode. But because we'd entered that ballot, I started thinking, well, if we do get into this marathon, like I can't just give up because I can't run for a minute. So, you know, why not just at least try and keep going? And it was really tough in the first few weeks. But after every sort of session, I came back and I was like, I feel really accomplished because I got out, I had some fresh air, I pushed my heart rate a little bit and didn't just sit at home all day, every day. And that was the part of it for me that started to get, I wouldn't say addictive, that's the wrong word, but just, you know, that was why I wanted to keep coming back for more. So even though it was really tough and I was struggling with actually running consistently or running for any certain length of time, that element of me going outside, getting fresh air, being out in nature and getting some endorphins and doing a bit of exercise, it was that sort of really kept me going.
Yeah.
But then we found out a couple of weeks later that we didn't get into the Berlin Marathon, at which point I was actually pretty relieved because I was like, well, I think we would have had something like a year, maybe just under a year, like 10 months to train based on when the ballot comes out and when you find out you're in. I didn't think I'd be ready. I was like, there's no way. I can't, just run a marathon in that length of time. I was still struggling to run for 5 minutes at that point. So I was like, no, I'm happy I didn't get through, but I didn't want to give up. And I kind of thought if I didn't have anything to motivate me, I would just give up. So I entered a 10K race. that point. I was like, yeah, no, I can't run 5K, but let's push myself. I want to go a bit further with it and see what happens. And I'd always wanted to sort of be the kind of person that would maybe do events like that and get medals or push myself in ways that I hadn't before. I've always kind of tried to push myself in different ways. And this was just a new one that came with so many sort of benefits, physically, mentally, that I kind of stuck at it. And although it seemed a bit ridiculous to run a 10K race before I'd finished Couch to 5K, I kind of knew that I could go about it my own way and sort of, instead of put pressure on myself to, I don't know, run the whole of the distance without stopping, I thought, well, I can run as long as I can run, which if that's 5 minutes, so be it. Then walk a little bit, and then I can run another 5 minutes, and then walk a little bit. And I ran the 10K that way and had so much fun with it and felt so accomplished afterwards that I just completely was taken up in it. And I was like, right, well, I want to do more and more and more. And yeah, so a year down the line, I'm training for my second marathon. So yeah, I just sort of stuck at it and really enjoyed it.
Yeah, which is amazing. Yeah, well, there's so much I want to, like, dive into. But the thing you said, like, right at the beginning, I think was really interesting about how you said, like, you just kind of didn't think, like, exercise was for you. And, like, I was wondering, is that, like, was that beliefs you think you had about yourself? Or was that, like, how exercise is kind of portrayed or, like, a mixture? Or
I guess it was kind of a mixture. It was personal experience because I'd never been particularly good at PE at school. And, you know, I think doing PE in like the early to mid 2000s at school, your teachers weren't exactly, they just didn't care about people that weren't good at it, especially in that sort of subject. They just wouldn't give you the time. And I just associated that with exercise. So I kind of thought, well, I'm not good at it, so why would I bother? It didn't feel like something that anyone could benefit from because that wasn't the way it was kind of portrayed to me when I was younger.
Yeah.
So I kind of took that element with me into early adulthood. But I always thought that exercise was kind of portrayed as this sort of super fitness, healthy living way of doing things where people are so extreme and all they do is train and everyone eats really healthily and drinks protein shakes all the time and that sort of thing. And I was like, I'm not like that. I watch TV and I like to eat crisps. And I just kind of thought, well, the gym isn't for me then because it's full of people that will judge me for that. But that's obviously not the case at all. But it wasn't until I kind of started getting into running that I realised actually exercise really can be for everyone.
Yeah.
You've just got to find that part of it that you like and that you want to keep going with and sort of challenge yourself with.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Definitely. Yeah. It's funny, I was speaking with, we're doing another podcast with Hannah, who's like, I think she's Fit Something Swansea on Instagram. And she was saying exactly the same, like she didn't think exercise was for her. And like her first, you know, kind of experience with kind of exercise was like seeing like kind of Jane Fonda stuff, right? And she was thinking, whoa, that's not my bag at all. So, and that's why I just think it's so important that we kind of have all different kinds of representations of exercise, you know, and not even just that, like you say, the whole lifestyle that comes with it, it doesn't have to mean that you eat, you know, clean, whatever that means, and, you know, have all the fancy kit, and you know what I mean? Like, it's, you know, it can be, where like, for you, wherever you're at, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's why, like, honestly, like, I just love your Instagram so much, because I just think you really, like, personify that. Honestly, I think you're the only runner, like, I follow, and, like, and again, I'm sure there are maybe some amazing other runners out there that I should. But, you know, just because it's, you know, as someone that, like, isn't really a runner, like, I can see kind of, like, what you get from it and the fact that it, yeah, it's not so much about the activity itself. It's, like, what it, like, gives you, you know?
Yeah.
And that really, you know, comes across.
Yeah. I do always try not to sort of focus on things like time or pace. I know a lot of people do focus on that, but I know, like, if I do post about that sort of thing, it's usually sort of a celebration of saying, like, well, I don't necessarily run at the speed that everyone else does or that a lot of other people do. And I know there are so many people out there that are the same as me but are too scared to admit it because so many other people are running significantly faster or constantly like having this massive improvement, and I kind of just want to make it clearer to everyone that, you know, it doesn't matter how fast or how slow you run, if you run, you run, you know, you're still doing it. So I do, I try and sort of encourage people not to be sort of hard on themselves or like ashamed of their speed or anything like that, because like there is a lot of that out there in the running community. I don't know where it comes from necessarily, because, you know, there are plenty of people out there that are celebrating slower runners, or, you know, just accepting that everyone is different and some people run faster and some people don't.
Yes.
But still, people are kind of scared of, you know, entering races and getting themselves out there because they think that everyone runs like an 8-minute mile and they're just going to be completely left behind. So I do try and shout loudly about that kind of thing.
Yeah, definitely. And I know we've talked before as well about some of the kind of, you know, races and things, about how they're not really that supportive of runners who aren't, you know, the front of the pack or whatever.
I mean, even yesterday when I ran a half marathon, I was one of the last people out on the track, and I had just like realised I'd got a personal best, and I was like really happy about it, and there was no one at the finish line. There wasn't a single person left, and I was like, okay, you just gotta get on. And I mean, there were marshals there still, but everyone's, you know, they're putting stuff in the van or whatever, and it's kind of, it can feel really crappy to kind of have worked so hard for so long in a race, especially the longer distance ones, and for there to be, you know, no one left to the finish. It's kind of, everyone's done their race and gone home, and sometimes that can feel, it can sting a little bit, but it's not always like that. There are really good support mechanisms out there for slower runners, and there are so many like great race organizers that will make sure that there are people at the finish, or that will try and make the experience the same for everyone, but that's not always the case. So I think sometimes that in itself can put people off, which I don't like at all. I would rather everyone gets the same experience and everyone's celebrated. I think that's quite an important thing.
Yeah.
Because it's not easy running slowly.
No.
Yeah, they're running fast. So.
Yeah, exactly. That's the thing. It's like, it's a like win just to like show up, you know, like it really isn't about the actual, the time or anything. Like, it's just, and it is such a shame. And I'm sure like it will hopefully change, like particularly, you know, like, you know, people like you kind of carry on entering these races, right? And then, you know, and other people, you know, as well. And I think, hopefully they will, because I think it's, it's just so important, isn't it? Like you say, for people, you know, especially if they are slightly like earlier in their maybe like running kind of journey or whatever, that actually could quite easily get put off completely by their experience in one of these races, you know.
You entered one and it wasn't as good as I know they can be, then that might put them off forever. And I really hate that idea that, you know, they might have a bad experience and then never want to go back, when actually, if you catch the right race, you can have the best experience and then want to go back again and again and again.
And I think they're...
No, I was just going to say, I think like advice for anyone like that, like just take someone with you. If you're, you know, if you're going to a race, have one person there who you know is going to stay until the end, and it makes a world of difference just knowing that there's someone at the finish line waiting. Because, you know, if there isn't, it can feel a bit deflating, which doesn't take away from the achievement of what happened, obviously, but it does help if you've got people, or even just one person, kind of cheering at the finish line when you're done. That for me is sort of the biggest.
Yeah, definitely. And you can think about that like during the race, right? That, you know, you've got that person there and stuff.
Yeah,
no, I think that's good. And like you say, there are, I mean, you know, like I said, I'm not a runner, but I have done a half Tough Mudder thing. And I think I was speaking to you about this before, but I was really like pleasantly surprised by how like friendly and encouraging that was. You know, I was kind of expecting it was going to be a bit kind of macho, do you know what I mean? Like, take care of yourself, like, keep up, or, you know, that's it, you know. And it wasn't at all. Like, there were people, like, helping each other over, like, the obstacles and stuff. And I'm not even sure they do, like, times particularly. I think they might, like, the first three people that cross the line get, like, a medal or something. But I didn't get time or anything. And it was just really nice, because I just thought, oh, like, it was a really nice... yeah, atmosphere. It felt, you know, really rewarding to, you know, to kind of get to the end. And, you know, I don't know. It was just, it just really showed me about how nice, like, an event could be. And like I said, I was, you know, especially with the kind of way they brand it and stuff like that, I wasn't expecting that. So, you know, it was really nice. I thought, well, you know what, I might even do that again, you know. So
that surprised me, because I'm always really scared of the idea of something like that, like obstacle course races, because you get this impression of them that they're like a, if you can't do it, get out kind of thing. And that's really scary, because I'm like, what if I can't? But it is nice to hear that they are quite friendly events.
Yeah.
Because at the end of it, everyone's doing it, aren't they? Everyone's kind of pushing themselves in different ways, probably, than everyone else. So quite nice that they're supportive.
Definitely. And I think, you know, what I quite liked as well is with obstacles, like, you're kind of naturally sort of better at some than others, but it's kind of the same, like, everyone will have their sort of strengths and weaknesses, you know. And so I don't know, that was quite nice. So yeah, it was good. And again, I don't know if that's typical of all obstacle races, or, you know, how much variability there is, but I think you know, it showed that, you know, these events and things can be sort of friendly and welcoming and stuff. And, you know, I even just think, for, like, selfish reasons, like, from a business perspective, right, if they make it welcoming, more people will come and do your race, you know. So
yeah, you don't just want the same 10 customers over and over again, do you?
No, exactly. for sure. So, and I think, you know, that's a thing as well, like, if you have a good experience, well, you have a bad experience, you will kind of talk about that with other people. So, you know, I think, is a big thing. Yeah, the other thing I wanted to speak about, obviously, I say recently done your PhD, it probably feels like a long time ago. It does for me now, since I handed in my thesis. But, I guess, I think you might have posted about this before, in terms of, like, the... almost like a parallel between, like, doing a PhD and, like, running a marathon. It's like, that was that kind of, like, how it felt, like, with the kind of marathon you've done?
Yeah, I mean, I think the reason that I've taken to running in the way that I have, and especially the reason that, you know, I'm pushing myself further in distance rather than in pace, is probably because of, like, my educational background and kind of picking up this sort of 4-year long project and motivating myself to get through it, and kind of working, chipping away at every day, and, you know, hitting some milestones, missing others, those kinds of things. I think that has a real strong parallel with training for a marathon, and it is, for me, I am very well suited to those kind of long-term goals where you're sort of chipping away slowly rather than sort of running out fast and then coming back and being like, right, that was done. Like, I'm very much more of a long game kind of person. And I think that's why, you know, especially in the final year of my PhD, when I really properly started running, I think that's why it helped me so much to get through the end of my PhD, because I was kind of channeling those same skills just in something different. So whenever the PhD would get really frustrating, as it does in those final stages, had something else to put that into, and I would go outside and I would run and go, you know, for a long distance or a short distance or whatever, and come back, and then I felt sort of better prepared to take on the next little bit of the PhD. So I think there are loads of parallels, and that is probably the reason why I prefer long distance rather than sort of speed running.
Yeah, definitely the same in terms of, like, a sort of long game kind of approach, which I think is maybe actually one of the characteristics you just kind of need to do a PhD, because I think if you're a sort of, I think if you want the sort of, I mean, I guess sometimes we do want this kind of instant gratification, but I think if you can't sort of sustain something for a long time, then you just kind of won't, yeah. You know.
But it's exactly the same. Like, you need that skill to be able to run a marathon. Because you can't just run out really fast and be like, done.
Yeah.
Even the fast runners, it's going to take them a good solid, you know, 2 to 3 hours, even the really fast ones. And that is a long time to be running. So you can't, you've really got to sort of put some endurance thinking into it rather than just expect it to be done in kind of 10 minutes. And I think if a lot of people might start running and sort of drop back because they get fed up really quickly. Whereas I'm like, I love just being in my own head for 3 hours pounding the pavement. Like I love it. So it's,
And like what, like maybe it's different with different races, but like what does go through your head when you're running for like that long? Is it the race itself? Is it other stuff? Is it, you know,
this might sound really weird, but it's almost nothing. And that is, for me, that's I need that because my head is so busy a lot of the time that actually all I really think about when I'm running is like running. But I'm not actively thinking about running. I'm every so often I'm like, oh, I've done a mile, or great, 10 to go, or, you know, 9 to go. Oh, okay, I'm keeping the pace up, good. That those kind of immediate thoughts run through my mind. But otherwise, there's nothing back there. And I need that. That's really therapeutic for me. I'm not like some people can go out and, you know, think, oh, I had this problem and I've really processed it now and I feel much better. That I don't do that when I'm running. Probably because I'm doing that 24/7 otherwise.
Yeah.
So it's time for me to basically just be out listening to the rhythm of like my feet and me breathing and just kind of moving forward and letting the kind of chemical feeling of it just sort of kick in and feeling the endorphins and that sort of thing. Like I really, that's what goes through my head when I'm running.
Yeah, no, that totally makes sense. Like almost like a kind of meditative thing. Like it, yeah, and I guess, you know, like when people talk about like the runner's high and stuff, like you say, like that's the physiological thing, or like in you know, psychology, the term like flow state is like a similar kind of thing where it's like you're sort of it's a kind of awareness, but a sort of, yeah, I don't know, like you say, where you're kind of not thinking about anything, but yeah, sort of present as well. Like it's, yeah, I can totally see that.
Hard to explain it. When I look back on, like, you know, yesterday's race, for example, I think, well, what was I thinking? I was out there for, like, maybe 3 hours. What was I thinking about?
Yeah.
There wasn't really anything. That's nice. I like that.
Yeah, definitely.
I think, again, probably another reason why I took to running when I did, because obviously I was in, you know, in the final year of the PhD, I was worrying about like finances and what I was going to do afterwards and how I was going to get it all done, whether I was going to be able to submit, you know, all of that sort of goes around 24/7 in your head. But if I could get 30 minutes a day where that wasn't happening, then it really, really made such a difference. And I could just be outside and the thoughts would just slow down while I ran. And I just felt so much better for that. So I guess that's probably why I stuck at it when I did, rather than trying a few years in the past and giving up every so often and not bothering for a few years.
Yeah. Because it was like giving you that kind of greater, kind of, I guess, purpose or whatever. Yeah. And do you think, like, with that, there's, I guess, the potential for, like, it to become kind of obsessive, or do you know what I mean, because of how you feel when you do it, like, or
I mean, definitely to an extent. And I think with some people it can, and they do run, you know, multiple times a day every day, and it starts to become potentially unhealthy. But I don't feel like I'm in any danger of it becoming obsessive, mostly because I know when I'm tired, and I'm quite good at not doing things when my body tells me not to. And I think that, again, that's another reason why I've managed to kind of run as far as I have and as many distances as I have without getting injured. And it's because I rest when I need to rest. Even if I'm like desperate for a run, if I, you know, if there's any reason that my body is saying don't run, I don't. I listen to that. Mm-hmm. And you have to really be in tune with yourself and think, oh, hang on, there's a bit of a niggle here in my leg or whatever. So instead of making that worse today, which I easily could, I'm going to, you know, go to the gym instead or whatever. And you probably could get addicted to it, but it's, you can't, I don't think you can maintain that for very long anyway. So even if I wanted an hour a day, I'd say that that's okay, because I'm not going to be running for 6 hours every day, because I don't think I physically could.
Yeah.
I would have to stop, because my body would just give in. So
yeah,
for me, the amount I do, I think, is fine. And I think, you know, more is obviously achievable as well. But it's all about just listening to your body and knowing, listening to the cues that it gives you and knowing when is too much, and just resting when you have to rest. I think that's like one of the most important lessons.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, yeah, like being kind of honest about that as well, because I think sometimes, you know, it can be easy to like think, oh, like I'll just like push through this, or I'll just, you know, so I think it's great the way you say that, like you're really kind of, don't, strict sounds like the wrong word, but just firm, I suppose, with like if it's not, you know, if it's not right that you run, you know, for whatever reason, you don't, and you kind of stick with that, you know.
And I think, like, especially in this day and age of sort of having social media 24/7, it can really feel like everyone's running all the time. Mm. But it's only because they post when they run rather than when they're not, you know. Like, people don't post, oh, I had a rest day today, sat and watched TV all day, wasn't it great? Like, people are only like, great, just did 10 miles, feeling amazing.
Yeah.
And then you feel like everyone's running all the time, so it's all this pressure to sort of push yourself even harder. But actually, I think rest is, people don't think of rest as part of their training. They think of it as the absence of training, but it's just not that at all. You know, like, it's such an important part of any kind of exercise, sort of letting your body recover and letting your muscles regenerate and stuff.
Yeah.
It's a really important part, and it's not given the attention that it deserves or the respect that it deserves, because people only really respect hardcore activity rather than, you know, like hardcore rest.
Yeah, that's so true. And I think often, like you were saying, sometimes it actually almost can take more, like, I don't know, like discipline, if that's the right word, for like to rest, right? Like when, you know, maybe like, you know, like mentally you kind of fancy that like run, but actually, you know what, like your body is like, no, you know? So yeah, I think you're right. And I think the fitness industry as a whole has like so much work still to do, and the kind of idea of like actually emphasizing the importance of rest and stopping to like glorify pushing yourself to these like extremes and being hardcore, and, you know, and I do see it kind of changing a little bit, but I think there's still so much to do. It's interesting, again, I mentioned this with when I spoke with Hannah, and I think, although I do feel really frustrated with the kind of fitness industry generally, like I think sometimes I have to remember that it's like a really young industry compared to other industries. And it's almost like in its like teenage years where it's still kind of figuring stuff out, you know, and I hope it, you know, it improves and things. But yeah, again, I think that's why it is important, you know, with things like social media, you know, that people do kind of show, yeah, the kind of reality of things, and, you know, obviously post what you want to post, like, you know, like no one should feel obliged to post when they don't want to, but
well, yeah,
you know,
I think that, yeah. I always try once at the end of the month, a lot of people will do, like in the running world anyway, a lot of people will post their sort of monthly mileage stats, which is quite common, and I do as well, but I post it to kind of say that actually I'm never ashamed if I've only run sort of 10 miles in a month, or, you know, and I'm going to also celebrate if I've run 100, like whatever.
Mm.
But I also sort of try and emphasise how many of those days I was active. And I think a lot of people are always really surprised. And it's like, well, I was only active for 10 days out of the month, that kind of thing. Like, I only did 10 runs or whatever. And everyone's like, what? Like, it feels as though everyone's running all the time. But I think if everyone sort of shared the amount of days that they were active, you'd really realise exactly how much you need to rest. especially if you're just starting out with running as well. I mean, I know a lot of people that follow me are doing Couch to 5K or have just started it or want to start it and want some inspiration. And I think, like, you have to be really careful not to make it look as though you're just running all day every day and not doing anything else, because A, people have lives and they're busy, and we all have jobs, and not all of our jobs are running, obviously. But also because it is so important to give yourself time off from anything, even if it's the activity that's giving you time off. You know, running gave me time away from work and those kinds of things, but you also need time away from that. So
yeah.
I think I do try and kind of emphasise that I'm not some sort of machine that can just keep going.
Yeah.
The reason that I'm able to keep going is because I rest quite a lot, actually.
Yeah. No, I think, I agree. And I think that's so important. I think that's, you know, great that you do that. And I just think it is important that we do that. And I think it, you know, take the pressure off, like, ourselves as well. Like, if we're not trying to, like, have this, like, high standard of, like, what we want to, like, post on Instagram, right? Like, it just, you know, like, and I think it's the same, like, with food and stuff, right? Like, people that kind of only ever post, like, you know, quote-unquote healthy stuff or clean stuff or whatever, rather than, like, a bit of a mixture or whatever, you know, to show what it is really like, you know.
I think everyone just needs to be more honest.
Yeah.
We are all human, and, like, humans have certain needs, and our needs aren't just running and eating lettuce.
Yeah, exactly.
we do, every so often, like to spend a day in front of the TV eating chocolate.
Yes, yeah.
Honest about things like that, really.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, we're not robots, and, like, want to be, right? Like, it's, you know, that.
Well, yeah, why would we want to be?
I totally agree. I think it's, yeah, you know, and I do definitely see more of that now. I think it's still, you know, not common, but there are definitely accounts that do kind of portray that, and you know, which is nice to see, because I think that is the other thing about social media. You know, we can kind of decide who we, you know, follow and don't follow and stuff as well, and kind of, you know, curate our kind of feeds to be, you know, what we want to see, right? And that sounds really obvious, but I think sometimes, you know, we have to unfollow maybe, or, you know, like, people that just don't make us feel good for whatever reason, and that's fine, you know.
Yeah, like, we're totally in control of what we see on our screens, and again, I think people forget that sometimes as well, and it's so easy to sort of feel bad about yourself by looking at social media. But if we're all just slightly more honest and a bit more forgiving of ourselves and of, like, the people around us, you know, we'd all get on a lot better, and actually we'd probably be more productive in things like sport and exercise and running, because there'd be less shame around it, and there'd be less stigma, and, you know, less of an idea of who should and shouldn't be doing it, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Because none of those things really exist. They're, you know, they're just constructions. So we can all kind of break out of any stereotype, really.
Yeah, I completely agree. Yeah, that, like, sense of freedom, I think, yeah. And, like, as well, connect with others as well. So, like, I mean, we, like, know each other, like, through Instagram. And, you know, I think if you are, you know, kind of honest and open and things on Instagram, then when you meet someone, it's great, because it's just, you're just carrying on that conversation. But there's certainly, I think, you know, sometimes where, like, you might meet someone and you're like, oh, wow, that's very different to, and I think we've spoken about this before, that's very different to your, you know, social media presence or persona. And that's a shame, I think, really.
It is a shame, and also difficult to maintain.
Mm.
It must be exhausting, sort of pretending to be someone that you're really not. I couldn't imagine doing that at such a level that you kind of do have to be able to keep up a social media profile.
Yeah.
I just think all of that pretending, you know. And,
yeah.
And to a certain extent, social media can be great, because you can set up an account and you can be anyone you want to be, and eventually, you know, if you sort of think in a certain way enough and speak in a certain way enough, you do kind of start to manifest those things a bit, and you do change your personality slightly, and that can be for the better. But at the same time, like, if, yeah. if you're really, you know, going for cheese and your chalk, like, it's yeah. not going to work.
Yeah, exactly. And then I would have thought it just must make you surely quite anxious when you meet someone, like, in person, because you're going to think, oh no, I'm going to have to either, like, try and put on an act again or not and deal with them being a bit confused or whatever. So, yeah.
Yeah,
definitely. Yeah, I do think about that sometimes, but...
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like, I don't... Yeah, I think... Yeah, it's so much easier, like you say, just to be more honest. And again, that doesn't mean, you know, you have to literally share everything, but, you know, share... you know, just a realistic perspective of your life, right? And I mean, I think especially with social media, there are so many ways you can do it, right? Like, if you want your feed to be really nice, you can, you know, post stuff on your Instagram stories, or, you know, so I think you can still have a balance between, you know, showing things that are, I don't know, aesthetically pleasing or whatever, right? Or like what, how you want, and then posting other things on your, you know, on your story and things like that. So I do think that's important. So, yeah. And again, I do think these kind of conversations about social media are, you know, are coming sort of, you know, more to the fore now, which is good, because I think it's still so new, isn't it, really, social media? Like, it's, you know, I don't know how old Instagram is. What, like 5 years? Is it older than that?
It might be older.
Yeah, maybe it is. I just didn't know about it.
It's only in the last, I would say, 5 years that it's actually taken off. Used to just be sort of photo editing software. But now it's become, like, it's big.
Yeah.
And, you know, people are using Instagram for a living. And people, you know, you've got influencers now as a thing. And it's a whole new world out there to try and navigate. And
it is.
It can be a really scary place, and it can be really sort of misleading and overwhelming, but it also can be really sort of eye-opening and like a really great way to meet new people and try new things. I'm very grateful to Instagram for sort of how it has helped me to kind of change my life in a lot of ways, but at the same time, I think you have to be really mindful of like what you're posting and how it looks to other people, how it might affect someone else, those kinds of things. And people aren't necessarily mindful enough when they're using Instagram.
No, I agree. And I think even if something doesn't have like the potential to cause harm, it still can. So I think, it is being really kind of, aware of that. And, you know, taking responsibility, because I sometimes see it's kind of all almost thrown onto like the consumer. And I think whilst yes, the consumer does have some responsibility, like anyone can see Instagram, you know, it could be someone really vulnerable, it could be a child, right? I mean, you don't need an Instagram account to look at an Instagram page. So I agree. I think it is it is really important that, you know, we do that. And I think, yeah, like you say, it's kind of, you know, there are, you know, sort of, I don't know, the kind of light in the dark side of Instagram, right? Like, you know, and I think it's important to, you know, acknowledge both. I mean, the whole influencer thing, I'm just a bit like, I don't know how I feel sometimes about it.
I know,
and working with, brands, and I don't know. Yeah, I've done like...
It's a minefield to try and navigate it.
It is.
The most important thing for me is that people remain honest and don't try and pretend that they're some sort of superhero or, you know. You have to imagine life without Instagram and think, okay, how would I still sort of measure my self-worth and those kinds of things? And if actually it's all in those little squares, then you need to sort of take a step back. And I also think people need to remember that, you know, if you're sent products, it doesn't mean that you're better than someone that's not. Those kinds of things. Because I think there is a tendency these days to be like, look at all this post that I'm getting with all these products or whatever. And that's great for them.
Yeah.
Or, you know, for anyone that's, you know, sort of working with brands or anything like that. But it really isn't a measure of self-worth, and I don't think it should be seen as that.
No, not at all.
Someone can just look on and think, God, they must be so like cool, they must be so popular or whatever, look at all this stuff that they're getting, and I'm just little old me sat in this corner. But actually, like, we're all worth something, obviously. Yeah. It's just not necessarily measured so publicly on social media. So
yes, yeah, I agree. I completely agree. And like, I remember saying to someone once, I almost wish, like, with you know, like follower numbers and things, that it was like you couldn't see it. Because I just think, like, I don't know, like, who needs to know? Like, do you know what I mean about how many like followers or whatever you have? And
because it should be a public number.
Yeah, you know, I just because I you know, I totally agree about the self-worth thing. And I think that it's the numbers, I think, that almost contributes that, because I think it makes it seem tangible when it's not. Really, you know, it's
definitely. And I think people use Instagram differently depending on how many followers they've got. Which, you know, and you can follow someone when they've only got a couple of hundred followers, and a year down the line they've got, you know, tens of thousands, and you watch them change as it happens, and it's kind of like, that's quite scary in a way. You know, even if you've got like 98 followers or whatever, it doesn't mean that what you're saying isn't like any more valid than someone that's got 100,000 followers. Like,
no,
it doesn't mean they're right.
No, exactly. So, yeah, I agree. And sometimes, yeah, you see again them like promoting things, and you're like, really? Is that, you know, is that for the money, or is that, you know, because you're genuinely, you know, kind of passionate about it? So yeah, it is. And I think, yeah, it's something to kind of to try and be mindful of. And
definitely.
Yeah, both, I think, yourself and with other people, you know. And you know, if someone's account is making you, you know, feel like shit, then unfollow, you know. I think, yeah,
you just on your feed.
Yeah,
and they won't anyway half the time.
No, exactly. Yeah. So
no one's going through their followers being like, well, that person unfollowed me, like, who's got time to do that?
Yeah. Yeah, I completely agree. Like you say, it's something to, I think, be kind of mindful of as we're, like, you know, kind of navigating it. And yeah, and like proactive, I think, about it and stuff. And yeah, and I think with the brand thing as well, I always think of it from the brand perspective as well. Because like, I remember someone posted, I've forgotten who it was, but basically was saying that they were like a small business and they'd been absolutely flooded with messages from, like, you know, kind of influencers, quote unquote, that didn't have that much of a following, that were just kind of after like free stuff. And that was like, oh God, you know, she said like, they'd not really like kind of engaged much with the brand before, like, don't think it ever brought anything. And I just thought, oh gosh, you know. So I think, you know, we sometimes, like, you know, need to think about things from a, like, a brand, you know, perspective and things as well as, you know, kind of individuals.
Definitely.
And, you know, I think, you know, regardless of how many followers you have, like, if you do want to support brands and you know, businesses, and particularly small businesses, like, buy their stuff, you know, like, and if you wouldn't buy it, you shouldn't promote it. So.
And what's the point in just getting stuff? That's what I was struggling to understand. Like, you wouldn't want it. Like, if you wouldn't buy it, you don't need it and you wouldn't want it. I really do struggle to understand, like, some influencer stuff where it's kind of like, oh, I got sent this new, like, loofah in the post, isn't it lovely? Like, well, yeah, but would you, like, do you want that? Like, are you going to use it? It's going to clutter up your house. Like, realistically, it's just going to clutter up your house.
Yeah.
And now you're making people think that they want one when they probably don't. And it's kind of, it is a bit, Instagram does have a sort of feeling sometimes as though it's just becoming a who's got what and who doesn't.
Yeah. And I think as well, when there's a lot of that, it also kind of dilutes what an account's about, you know?
Yeah.
And they become a kind of billboard for brands, you know, rather than actually what the account originally started for, you know?
Yeah. And you want to celebrate kind of what the account's for rather than what the latest product they've been sponsored by. Like, I do find it hard to continue to follow sometimes people that are just constantly promoting something, because I do kind of think, well, what are they trying to say? What message are they actually putting out there? And I just, it doesn't say anything to me. So I just kind of, I don't really want it on my feed.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, you know, there are sometimes like ways that you can do it where, you know, if it is something that's like occasional and it's something you feel is really like in line, like I've only ever done one sponsored post and it was like for a charity where it was like a t-shirt and 100% of the profits went to charity, and it was like a young people kind of mental health charity. And even with that, I thought about it for like 2-3 weeks because I was like, oh, this is like the first time I'm actually being paid to post something. That feels like a really big step for me. But actually, you know what? Like, I really want to support this charity, and you know what, I would post about them even if I wasn't being paid for it. So I was like, you know what, like,
that's the thing, isn't it? I think that's the number one question that needs to be asked whenever someone's asked to sponsor something, is would I post about it if I wasn't being paid?
Yeah,
if the answer to that is no, then just don't do it.
Exactly, because,
you know, you're not really helping anyone by doing that. You're not selling something honestly, you're not helping the brand, because realistically people will buy it and be disappointed, and actually that destroys a relationship far more than, you know, someone buying it off their own back and not liking it or whatever, because they feel misled. So I think,
yeah,
you know, if you wouldn't post about it, or if you don't use the product, or if you wouldn't use the product, don't do it.
Yeah.
Don't post, or, you know.
Yeah.
Or be honest. If someone's given you something to review and you don't like it, say you don't like it. I very rarely see honest reviews of something.
Yeah.
A lot of times I loved this, it was really great, and people are really trying to pull whatever they can out of it. The colour's wonderful, you're like, well, great. Like, whatever it is.
Yeah.
But if you don't like it or it doesn't work for you, just say that.
Yeah.
So I just think,
exactly.
Or if the brand, you know, won't let you say it, then don't work with them.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I think that's the other thing as well. It's this the kind of contract or whatever that you have kind of with the brand, I think. And I think there are, you know, I think it's starting to be more regulations and stuff around this. I know, like, in terms of
quite a lot.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
Advertising standards agency and that kind of thing.
Yeah, and flagging something as an ad really clearly.
Yeah.
What I only found out recently, which really shocked me though, was that sometimes what brands will do is they will pay an influencer to do a negative post about their competitor, and they don't have to declare it as an ad because they're not promoting something. They're supposedly talking down about it, so that doesn't have to be declared. Yeah, it's crazy.
Oh my god, I didn't know you could do that.
I know, I didn't. Like, I was watching a YouTube, I wish I knew who it was, I came across a YouTube video talking about it. I was like, oh my god, I didn't know that was a thing. Like, yeah.
Technically, that would still be against regulations because it's a paid collaboration with the brand.
So yeah, but only if you're promoting it, because they've spoken to like advertising agency or whatever, and it's literally, if you're promoting something, you do. But if you're being paid not by, like, by, do you see what I mean, by a different brand, and you're talking negatively, you apparently don't, which is
crazy.
So, yeah, but I think even like little loopholes like that, I hope will get ironed out soon, because I think it's so important that, you know, we do have this honesty, you know, around what people are being paid for, and you know, and so people can take that into consideration, because, you know, if you are being paid for something, you know, may well feel more favourably about it than, you know, than if not. And you can't necessarily help that, right? Like, that's, you know, potentially, you know, just something, again, to just flag to, you know, for people to kind of, yeah, to bear in mind, I think. So, yeah, I mean, that's,
I never knew that.
Yeah, I didn't until recently. I was like, oh my gosh, yeah.
Wow.
If I can find the YouTube video, I'll put it in the show notes if you want to watch it and sort of talking about it. But that was, yeah, very, very eye-opening. And they even identified some of these, like, you know, like influencer marketplace platforms where brands were kind of saying, oh, we'd like you to, like, do a review of, like, our product against some others. And, you know, so, yeah, it's it is scary. So, but I think all this stuff, you know, is coming to light now, and I think there are more conversations about it, and I think that it, you know, it will get more heavily regulated, which I think is a good thing, because, you know,
yeah, I agree.
off social media, things are very tightly regulated, and you know, we do need
to say. I think, like, it might help a little bit with people sort of not really thinking about these things before they do them, because actually Instagram is in danger of becoming just like hashtag ad, hashtag gifted.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, actually I'm gonna get really bored of that really quickly, and I think a lot of people probably will as well. And it means that people might be less likely to kind of do it. So actually it might really change the way that influencers work on Instagram, which I think probably is a good thing. Because before all of these regulations came in, it was still happening, we just didn't realise.
Mm.
And kind of in that instance, you just look at someone and you think, God, they're so glamorous, or, you know, they're so good at that, or they're so popular, or whatever, and it just makes other people feel bad about themselves.
Yeah, I agree.
Because
one of the reasons, like, I don't really do that much, like, just scrolling now, because literally every other thing will be like sponsored, and it's never something relevant at all, like, you know. And or it kind of is, it'll be like fitness, but like not my kind of fitness, or whatever, you know what I mean. So it's so I think you're right, actually, for you know, for kind of user engagement, you know, from that perspective, actually it does kind of need to be, you know, need to be addressed, I think. Because, yeah, personally now, I tend to, yeah, obviously a few things in my feed, but I tend to just more go specifically to accounts where I'm interested to see if they have posted, rather than actually just this kind of scroll, because of all these adverts in my face about all different things. Usually it's a lot of business stuff. I get a lot of, like, oh, how to be a six-figure fitness coach, or how to, you know, manifest £1 million, or, you know what I mean, that kind of thing. So
yeah.
Not sure what Instagram thinks about me, but
well,
yeah,
I don't think you're in any danger of turning into that thing.
Yeah, no, definitely not. No, it's like I make a point of deliberately closing every single sponsored thing, because I'm hopeful that eventually I can get no ads if I just close every single one, but hasn't happened yet. Oh, thank you so much. This has been an amazing chat, actually. We've covered a lot. So, yeah, it's great. So in terms of where people can find you, you've got your two Instagram accounts, right? Your vegan food one and your running one.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, do you want to give the, like, handles for them? I'll put them in the show notes as well, but just, yeah.
Yeah, so the vegan one is Verite Vegan. I mean, I'm slightly less active on there at the moment, but that's just sort of personal direction where things seem to have been going for me. I kind of, again, as with a lot of things on Instagram, sort of got a bit fed up with seeing people receiving just random food products in the post that no one actually wanted to eat. That was all my Instagram became a bit. But I mean, I felt like I got a lot more personally out of the running one, which is Becca Runs From Couch to Marathon. Cool. I'm posting there a lot more. I'm doing a lot more running than I am sort of experimenting with food anyway, so, but yeah, they're both active, they're both still there, so
great. I'll do that. Yeah, and I was reading the blog as well you wrote, so I'll pop that, and I think it's in your bio, isn't it, if you're running one, but I'll pop that as well, because I think that's I think such a good read for, like, demonstrating, like, what running kind of means to you, and, like, the kind of how is this kind of mental and physical kind of, you know, thing. So
yeah,
great. Oh, cool. Well, yes, thank you so much for your time, and yeah, bye.
Bye.
I hope you enjoyed the podcast today. I'd really appreciate it if you took 2 minutes and just gave me a review, positive or negative. I'd love to find out what you enjoyed, what you didn't, so that I can put together the best possible podcast. And it also helps it to go up in rankings so that other people can discover the podcast too. Thank you.